At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964, listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Another busy morning, day after day, and certainly into tomorrow for weekend preview, brought to you by Twin Spires, and lots to preview tomorrow, and I'm sure quite a bit will work its way into today's conversation because they drew across the country. Tampa, Sam Davis, and Aqueduct, the Withers. But also, can't forget, and I had forgotten actually, that the San Vicente, no N, not Vincent. It's not Vincent D'Onofrio. It's Vicente. I forgot about the San Vicente. And, of course, the 7/8. And, you know, some of these may end up stretching out. And others are going to be, you know, one-turners. And it's a nice group. That concert tour comes back, as Baffert had mentioned. Cruel Jack with a cowbred, the chosen Vron of Vronsky Gelding. Eric Cruel Jack, by the way, and I tried to get to Eric a couple of weeks ago, and we did not connect. So I wouldn't mind a visit. He's 4 for 8 at the meet. Everything he has sent out has been strong. In fact, if you're handicapping this race, the San Vicente, and I didn't necessarily mean to get involved talking about this particular race. It's a 6-horse race, 2 from Baffert, Cruel Jack, Callahan, Lerner, and O'Neill. If you're handicapping based on how the horses are running out of these barns, they're running well. It's amazing. In fact, Cruel Jack 4 for 8. Simon Callahan has had 9 starters. 2 wins, 3 seconds. Andrew Lerner, 9 starters, 2 wins, 2 seconds, and a third. Doug O'Neill, it's just healthy numbers, 14% winners, 83 starters. O'Neill's emptying the cupboard. 12 wins, 8 seconds, 11 thirds. Baffert is hitting at over 25%. He's got 40 starters, 11 winners. That's an interesting number with Baffert because he's got 11 wins, 6 seconds, 4 thirds. That's unusual to have that win heavy, and even anybody that wins at a high clip will have, usually, a certain pattern to the placements and show efforts. This is a really good race, and there's horses here. As I mentioned, that cowbred of Cruel Jacks is a new face. Mr. Impossible, Alice Bamford, and the Coolmore team. This is Bamford homebred, Munnings, out of Carrabba. First start came against Concert Tour. It's a maiden, but ran very well behind Concert Tour. So 1, 2, 3, 4 of the 6 are making second career starts. Baffert also, and this is a horse we didn't talk about the other day with Baffert, going back to August, Freedom Fighter. I'd forgotten about this horse. The Violence Colt out of the City Zip Mare, Canadian Ballet, and was a winner at Del Mar going 5 and has worked really sharply, really well for the return. Draws the rail, of course. Baffert, even if he only has 1 horse in a race, he always draws the rail. He draws actually inside-outside because Concert Tour drew the six. This is a really fun race. Uncle Boogie for Andrew Lerner, coming off an allowance win where he cut back out of the sham. You know, here's a horse, you know, that you can understand why Lerner tried to stretch him out. A ride on Curlin and Abel Cedillo aboard, and a Square Eddie, Redham Homebred, another Calbred, found my ball. Broke the maiden against State Breds, going six, and got an 84 buyer doing it. This is a really good group, and it's a nice set of stakes at Santa Anita. The Thunder Road for the older males going a mile on the grass. Got a nice group in there. And you also have got, I think they moved, they actually, I think there was one stake that was supposed to go on Sunday, and they ended up running it. The Las Virginas is on the card with five fillies, including Moonlight Doro, the Mandela, Spendthrift, my racehorse, off the big maiden win, going back to Los Al. Calypso makes her second start of the year after the Santa Ynez win that we came up in conference. I can't remember, I can't keep track of them all. I try to keep notes, but during the conversations, but I can't remember if we brought Calypso up with Baffert the other morning or not. O'Neill in here, brilliant cut. Eric Johnson and partners out of the Santa Ynez third place finish. Honor America, last out maiden winner for Shelby Ruiz and her dad. And how about Michael McCarthy with the Don Alberto homebred by Empire Maker, Moraz, who had that romping win first week of the year. So five-pack for the Las Virginas. And the San Marcos, the mile and a quarter for the olders. So something tells me that there might be some, maybe there's a threat. I think there one of these turf races was supposed to be on Sunday, and maybe there's Sunday rain forecast, so they maybe moved one of the two turf races up. It would be my guess, just top of my head. There's actually a maiden action too on the grass going long. There's a nice group of races, 2 mile and an eighth grass races. So yeah, I think I'm going to guess there's a weather threat for Sunday. So just, you know, get the turf races in. Why not? So Santa Anita, you got to be excited about. The Gulfstream actually has got two stakes, but not as high profile as last weekend. Let's talk about the Sam Davis. I'm looking forward to, you know, thoughts later from Ed and Steve Askin. The now grade three, the last couple of years, Sam Davis ended up drawing a capacity crowd. There had been about 9 possibles, and it ended up filling up the entry box. And it's an interesting group. Give you the highlights. I mean, Candyman Rocket, I guess. You know, the maiden winner for Mott that's going to have to stretch out, Frank Fletcher. Certainly one of the principals. You got the Pasco winner back here for Mott as well. Nova Rags, Michael Shanley, homebred. Hidden Stash makes the seasonal debut in here. The Constitution for Vicky Oliver, BBN Racing. 2 wins, maiden win and an allowance win at the October, November, end of the 2-year-old season. Really good. Pletcher with Known Agenda, as he told us last week. That's the Viola homebred by Curlin out of Byrama. Very nice. And last seen in the Remsen. Smiley Sabatka for Dale, as Dale tries to get some of these 3-year-olds to click. And, you know, the Runway Magic in here, the Run Happy Divine Escapade colt that was 3rd in the Limehouse but had broken the maiden at Churchill on that closing weekend with a nice fig. Rusty Arnold and you know, that Limehouse that he participated in was won by Drain the Clock, who came back again and won the Swale on Saturday. So that's just some. And then there's, you know, then there's some unknown quantities in here, including a maiden for Stacey Hendry, Last Investment, Lucky Law, Pat B. and Cone for Sandy Bacon. Kind of a turf horse, but isn't that the B. and Cone M.O.? Kelsey Danner's got Ricochet, recent maiden winner, romping maiden winner. Boca Boy, Cheryl Weinbaugh. It's a real eclectic group. Millian for Pletcher, a maiden 50 winner for Donegal. It dipped down. That came at Gulfstream going the mile. And who'd we miss? Joe Man Joe, David Fisher, Lucky Seven, on Uncle Mo. So it's a nice big group, and the whole card at Tampa is quite attractive, the way it came up. The Tampa Bay, the Grade 3 on the grass, that's got some big names, some interesting names, and, of course, admission office, you heard Brian Lynch mention during his visit. Proven Strategies shows up here for the Greens, and Marcassi, and I think, he's the Empire, part of the Empire Racing Club? Good old Eons, the five-year-old, comes back, second start. And Sol Volante makes the seasonal debut, the gelding, last seen in the Tropical Park Derby. So, very nice. The Tampa Bay actually is not part of the cross country. The cross country, two races in New York, the Withers, which we'll talk about in a moment, and a New York bred allowance. The 7th and the 8th are the aqueduct legs. They didn't include Oaklawn in here. And then the 9th, 10th, and 11th, or no, yes, the 9th, 10th, and 11th is correct for Tampa Bay. The Suncoast for the Phillies and the Endeavor, the Philly and Mare turf race, and then the Sam Davis. So, four stakes in the cross-country pick five on Saturday. And the anchor leg will be the Sam Davis. The Endeavor I didn't actually look at too closely, but I do see Counterparty Risk, the Irish-bred four-year-old for Chad Brown, coming back for her seasonal debut. Mott's got a second North America, New York girl, won an allowance. And, yeah, those two kind of jump at me a little bit at first blush. Ron Potts with Iron of Reality, too, who we liked in the – this was brutal. We liked in the 2 weeks ago in the Privion and played a – reverse tri-key. Iron of Reality was 51-1, and Always Shopping was the winner, but I didn't get Delta Kingdom into that second slot, and that was too bad. Yeah. So Tampa comes through very, very nice, and looking forward to digging into that card. And then finally, the Withers, which suddenly is missing. Yeah, I was up early, early, and was kind of, there it is. It was going through downstairs. Did not want to disturb Tana. The Withers, mile in the eighth. So an early season 9 furlong evaluation. And Todd Pletcher, who left Overtook in New York, the Curlin out of Got Lucky. And this is the $1 million purchase that Rapoli, Viola,
and Coolmore came together with. And if we, you know, I'm not sure if John Secure is joining us today or not. I cannot, John and I cannot seem to connect on a time. But if John joins us, there's a number of Hillandale bred participants in the stakes cards this weekend. But the boys that gather at Aqueduct, risk-taking out of the maiden win as well for Chad, and won at a mile and an eighth in December at Aqueduct. Capo Kane, of course, for Harry Winter. And a couple of new faces, Trombetta, Royal Number for Larry Johnson and partners. This is a Fitzhugh Maryland bred by Palace Malice. Nice. Mr. Doda, Carlos Soto, coming in from Philly, and is going to have to stretch out. This is quite something. I mean, a horse that broke the maiden going 5.5 and has never been beyond 7. This is a aggressive spotting. Donegal Bay for Donegal, the Uncle Mo out of Solo Piano. Ultimately, this horse may want grass, but broke the maiden at Gulfstream in mid-December. Eagle Orb for Rudy Rod, second to Capo Kane in the Jerome, and coming off of a bullet preparing for this. Barry Ostrager bred this one. EV Racing owns, and Civil War for Tom Albertrani. Royal Number, I mentioned, for Trombetta. Shaq Queen King, Shackleford, Gary Capuano, won the Howard County and then was third, cutting back in the spectacular bid at Laurel 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. So there it is. There's your Withers, and a really nice, another nice Saturday. Is in the offing, obviously. So, and I mentioned that Gulfstream had, they've got the Suwannee River and the Ladies Turf Sprint as their stakes action. And a couple of maiden races, and there's actually a maiden mile that's kind of interesting, and you might see somebody in here parlay. There's a 6-furlong maiden race as well, but the mile race is probably one that could produce something to look ahead toward. All right, so there you go. There's the rundown of the weekend highlights, and there's a lot to like. Looking forward to it. Couple of news stories before Dick Powell joins us. And we're watching, you might have heard a couple of phone dings, and I had reached out to Adam Koenig in Frankfurt because the HHR bill, you know, that was introduced by Senator Schickel, and they were supposed to have today it had been scheduled. It is scheduled for today, the committee meeting. And there had, I guess, I'd seen, I think T.D. Thornton's piece in TDN. T.D. had mentioned that the online calendar hadn't had the meeting. So I reached out to Adam to make sure that it's happening, and he says it is. Meeting starts at 11 o'clock. And if you saw T.D.'s piece, and I'm sure Matt, I don't know if Matt, I'll see about Matt's coverage as well, and Frank Angst. But T.D. Thornton boiled this piece of legislation down to a paragraph, essentially, that the definition of the paramutual wagering and how it can be essentially amended or massaged to include the equipment, the historic horse racing equipment, which is based, the algorithms are based on the results of prior races that have been run. And so that's how they're, you know, that's how they've adjusted, you know, the terminology in this legislation. And, it, as I asked Adam last week, you know, it can that, is that enough? Will that satisfy the, you know, the courts? And clearly it would. So, and I'm sure, you know, clearing the committee is not an issue. In fact, Adam, as part of his response, you know, confirming that the committee session is today. Adds that, you know, those that have not yet made phone calls to your legislator or sent in the online letter of support for the HHR legislation, please do it. And it will not take you 10 minutes. I mean, it won't take you 3 minutes. You go to horseswork.com, and there's two things you'll get to, you know, that's the keep. And you'll see two red boxes. Send a message to your legislator, live outside of Kentucky, sign the petition, and do whichever applies to you. If you're in Kentucky, click on, you know, the advocate button, and then it's all self-explanatory. State senator, state representative, support state bill, Senate Bill 120. And then you can add your own if you want to add extra verbiage and mention how you're connected maybe to the industry and why it's important, you know, personally, you know, how you're affected, if you are, you know, specifically directly affected, or, you know, everybody in the state is affected just by the general economic benefits of the tourism, of the taxes, of everything, that the dining, I mean, you know, it's just, you don't need me to explain this. But then just enter your information and send message. It literally won't take you 4 minutes. And the same thing on the other side for, you know, for those that are living outside of the state and, you know, you've got to tie, you know, petition to the legislature to maintain historical horse racing. And all you have to do there is your first and last name, a mailing address, and an email address, and that's it to sign the petition. And obviously, if you know, there's a landslide of support from outside the state that says something, I imagine, you know, that will say something to the legislators as well. Please, I cannot, I mean, we've been harping on, not harping on it, but we've been exhorting the support for this for weeks. All right. So it's in your hands. I mean, obviously the, you know, the reps and the senators are doing everything they can to whip the, you know, the necessary support, you know, particularly in the House. But you can tip the scales here. You really can. And I keep pointing to the success of the NTRA's letter writing campaign to the Treasury Department and how that helped make the gambling winnings adjustment happen. So the same mechanics are at play here. A couple of other pieces of news, and including something I've reached out to TD, who can be tough to reach, actually. I'll mention this. I mean, I knew the name right away when I saw it, but I did not know Pat Lamberty. For those of you that saw the news yesterday, passed away in December in his 40s, and don't have many specifics, but, you know, certainly anybody, you know, around Suffolk, you know, knew Pat Lamberty, and he had, you know, come out of BU and into the, you know, into the press box and into the communications department at Suffolk, and he worked for Centennial too, as well. I saw Don Little had a nice quote. Lamberty was right from Revere, and you know, just it was engaging, and you know, if you during his tenure, you know, you'd see him on the feed, and he also had a turn with the OTB. You would see him on the OTB, New York City OTB, with Rick Lang and you know, another somebody else who was taken way young. So really sad, and you know, thoughts go out to his friends. Pat Lamberty, just 43, tough. So if I get TD, because TD, you know, they, you know, TD really the personality of you know, Suffolk. I see Jessica Paquette had some beautiful things to say as well about Pat. So we'll try to get an appropriate tribute. TD also wrote about the now litigation that is happening. Churchill is going to ask a judge regarding the TOC's adjustment that saw the, you know, the takeout shift, essentially. And Churchill doesn't, you know, Churchill would not agree to it. And they essentially calling it a shakedown. And we'll get, don't have to spend a lot of time on that today, but kind of fits into what we discussed yesterday with Charlie. You know, part of, you know, it's part of the mechanism that, you know, can be, you know, can be difficult. The, you know, the breakout of where, you know, the money is supposed to go, and where it's most appropriate to go, and, you know, how much the purse contributions to the bricks and mortar should be, and how much to the, you know, the ADW side. So we can probably for next week, probably as part of the industry future conversations. And directly tied to what went on yesterday with Charlie's visit and the specific that I sent out last night. I don't know if a lot of people saw it, so maybe I'll send it again, but you heard Charlie mention that Spectrum Gaming report, and I had a chance after the show to, you know, go look at it and see what it's about. And interesting company, frankly, the Spectrum Gaming, and they've done these market studies for a lot of states, and there's, I mean, a wealth of information in there. And as part of that story, and the New York Gaming Commission, you know, releasing the report, Tom Precious, you know, who has for years out of Albany covered, you know, the New York scene, Tom Precious has an extensive piece that is way too involved. I mean, the report itself is too involved to just, you know, casually glance at. So again, I'm not going to do it here, but I sent the link to that last night, and there's a lot going on in here, and it even actually brings up the, you know, the absence of the OTB system in New York, and at the same time, as Charlie referenced, it asks the question, why are there all these regional OTB corporations? And you know the answer to that from years of examination and consternation, because it was set up, you know, the OTB system in New York in 1970 was set up as, you know, as a patronage scenario, so that, you know, the various, you know, regions could hand out, you know, jobs to all the, you know, to the Batavia and you know, Capital and Catskill and Western and Central. You know, they set up essentially six different businesses when it all could have been done, you know, the actual management, instead of having, you know, six different management entities, they could have had one. So, you know, here it is. It's only 50 years later. 45, whatever it is, right? It's 50 years. And it in fact, Dick, maybe Dick Powell, in case, reach for Dick. Dick could certainly talk about this. He observed it. It's, the New York State model for OTVs, when other states followed and set up OTBs uniformly, they said, well, we know the one format we don't want to follow is New York. that was like a rallying cry. We're going to do OTV, but not like New York did it. So it's a dynamic that is still being examined and questioned all the way, you know, now, decades later. It's very, very interesting. And I encourage, you know, those that are into this topic to read Tom Precious's piece. I read it last night and have to go back a couple of times, I think, because there's a ton here. Dick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Dick, tell us about this Spectrum Gaming that came up yesterday, and you know, these market studies. They're really interesting, and there's a lot of valuable insight to, you know, to bat around.
Yeah, I read through it, and it's very difficult because what they've been tasked to do is to look at various scenarios as we add on three full-blown casinos in downstate New York, which are covered in the 2013 constitutional amendment. So we did the four upstate casinos, and by 2023, we should have the three downstate. So obviously, if you put a casino in X, it's going to have an impact on Y. And the question is how much. So you have a thing that most people don't know of called Jake's 58. And Jake's 58 is a VLT parlor, for want of a better term, run by Suffolk OTB out near the MacArthur Airport in Suffolk County, Long Island. It does phenomenal business. I mean, the numbers, the win per machine, just outrageous. Then you have the 1,000 machines within Resorts World in Queens, at Aqueduct, that are designated for Nassau and Nassau OTB. And they are still fully operational. They still have 1,000 machines, and they average sometimes over 1,000 win per machine per day, which I know there's people around the country saying, oh, come on, Dick, that's impossible. Yeah. Go look at gaming.newyork.gov, ny.gov, and you'll be able to find them. The numbers are astronomical. So as you add on, you're going to affect those properties. You're going to affect their performance. So the question is, well, how can we logically and rationally add on two or three new downstate casinos and then come up with the best revenue results for New York State? So that's a good part of it, and it's basically a bunch of what if scenarios. If we put it here, what if we put it there? What if this happens? And they're very difficult to do. I mean, obviously, it's not an easy task. But in reading it, you learn a lot about where the things are, where they're looking at. Nothing's been decided yet, but an assumption would be that one casino would be at Aqueduct. It might be a big enough casino and a hotel that would lead to the closing of Racing at Aqueduct, which has obviously ramifications. One would be possibly Yonkers, although Yonkers does not have a big footprint to expand, so would they then expand into the racing area? And racing would not be able to be conducted at Yonkers, which would have big, big impact on harness, not just harness in New York, but harness around the country. But Yonkers is running just about the highest purse structure in America for harness racing. So just all sorts of things like that are in there. I haven't seen the Tom Precious article. Tom, for years, has written for the Buffalo News. He covers Albany politics for the Buffalo News, but he also strings for the Bloodhorse. And Tom's work is just fantastic. I mean, I will speak that piece out and try to follow up and see what Tom has to say.
It's two printed pages, and frankly, as you mentioned, to give you an idea of how comprehensive this work is by the Spectrum Gaming entity, and what's nice actually of the thing I linked, there's the index of all of their market studies. So there's one in Louisiana, Florida. They've been engaged by, you know, they're obviously well respected for what they do, and the executive summary is 30 pages. forget the report itself. I mean, just the summary is a novella.
I went through all that, and then what you can do is once you have the entire document, the whole thing, then you can go through appendices.
Yes.
And read individual appendices and stuff like that, which I did, and tried to get as good a feel for what they did as possible. I don't know where it leads. There's still lots of conjecture on sports betting, which we have. Like, for instance, if I bet the Super Bowl, I have to drive a half hour to go down to Schenectady and be physically present to make a bet at one of the four upstate casinos that have that. If we ever go to mobile wagering, which would be nice, there clearly would be a constitutional challenge in court, and that is liable to take up quite a while. And I went back and looked. When I was involved with the VLT Coalition, the legislation passed on October 24th, 2001. The first VLT in New York State went active in January of 2004. So it was 26, 27 months for the entire legal challenge to get adjudicated by the court. And the Court of Appeals ruled 5-4 in favor of the VLTs being constitutional, which we didn't think it would be anywhere near that close on this issue. There's wording in that constitutional amendment from 2013 that's going to be very hard to get around within a court challenge. So I would certainly expect it to get challenged, and things always do. And then it's a lengthy process, so we're not looking at You know, I was reading stuff last year. Oh, we could have it in the first quarter of 2021. No. Actually, I wish that Rivers down in Schenectady had a bet, you know, a prop bet. When will mobile sports wagering be legal in New York? And then I think I could make some money.
You'll take the over.
Oh, without a doubt. Way over.
And, you know, I referenced, you know, I'm not going to discuss it with you, but today, but, you know, one reference I know came up yesterday with our visit and with Charlie, and you mentioned the 2001. And then, of course, there was, you know, the lottery department holding the aqueduct facility hostage for, you know, close to a decade, which was, you know, a grotesquery. That tap could have been running for, you know, for years. It's amazing how some of that, you know, was handled. And I know you and I are on different sides of a fence when it comes to this conversation about the franchise.
Well, just besides that, the one piece of that equation that never gets talked about is back in 2001, the New York Racing Association was against, and I mean against, VLT. They did not support the effort to have VLTs in New York. They were against VLTs, and the reason being is there was one issue that consumed all their attention and all their political capital that no one remembers. I mean, if we had a prop bet on this, I'd pretty well cash that no one's going to get this. The single issue for NYRA in 2001 was the sale of New York City OTB to the Stronach Corporation. And Stronach came in, and he was, quote, awarded New York OTB. I remember they had a press conference where they had the cardboard check for $300 million. So that was the issue that NYRA seemed, was most concerned with. They had no interest in VLTs. I mean, none. Now, that was 2001. We had what happened on 9/11. So one of the results was that the mayor did not turn over immediately. Bloomberg did not become mayor until later in 2002. And Bloomberg came in, and one of his first things was to reject the $300 million from the Stronach Corporation, which back then was Magna Entertainment, saying that we can do it better. So they did it so well that they went bankrupt. They turned down $300 million cash for a business that was hemorrhaging money.
Yep.
And wound up going out of business and having a severe impact on racing and purse money in New York, because a lot of that market was never recaptured, no matter what you did as far as getting people to the track, getting them to sign up with this, sign up with that. A lot of that money just vaporized. I mean, you can't track that $1 billion. You can't look at that $1 billion annually that was bet at New York OTB and say, so much went here, so much went there, and it adds up to close to $1 billion. If it adds up to $400 million, I'd be shocked. So a lot of it was with people that like to go to the branches, like socialize, like to make a bet. And when that ended, it ended. That was it.
Yeah.
So the government had a chance to get $300 million, not a real good move on the Stronach Corporation, but that's what they wanted to do. New York City government turned it down. Mayor Bloomberg, who was obviously a very smart man, he got some bad advice on that one. He turned it down. They didn't do a better job. They went out of business, cost a lot of people. What was really horrible with that is when it went out of business, the employees somehow lost their medical and pension rights,
yep,
which is just unheard of in the public sector. And that happens in the private sector occasionally, but in the public sector, that's just unheard of. And yet most of those people were severely hurt by that whole that whole demise. So that was quite the mess.
No doubt. And we spent, you know, spent a lot of time during that, you know, during that period. Yeah, I know, you know, Naira believes that they, you know, with Naira Bets and, you know, the advent of, you know, of a Naira-based ADW, which is, you know, essentially the same as betting, you know, at Aqueduct Belmont or Saratoga. That's how the bet is treated. They're confident that they've gotten a certain, you know, significant portion of that revenue, you know, based on, you know, based on geo tracking, essentially, that, you know, that could be attributed to the city OTBs. But obviously it, you know, that's a tough number to, you know, to manufacture, to recreate. So it's,
Well, they don't break that number out, so it's hard to it's hard to judge. Like if I make a bet with an out of state ADW, it shows up in that monthly report. There's like $40-50 million a month that's bet by New York residents with out of state ADWs that then have to pay a 5% fee, and which then gets tracked up among Naira, OTB, and the harness track, which also kind of belies that it's like a worst case scenario when people talk about bet in state. And yes, I agree with that, and I get that. But at the same time, if you do bet out of state, some of that money does come back to the industry. And that was also true when you bet out of state at OTB. OTB used to have to pay, still has to pay 4% on those bets. 2% goes to the track, and 2% goes to purse money. So if OTB buys a simulcast signal for 5%, it's really costing them 9%.
Right.
Because of the in-state payments that they have to make, which is fair. I'm not saying it's not. But that often gets neglected when people are pawning on numbers. I'll make one last quick point, Steve.
Yeah.
This is a good one. One of the people that was involved in stringing along Naira from getting the VLT operation going is right there involved in that hockey stadium next to Belmont.
Interesting.
And the other thing, another reason why VLTs didn't get up and running as fast as they should have was once Naira did get involved, they did not competitively bid who they were going to have as an operator, which was a problem. And they went with MGM, which was fine. MGM is a reputable company. But I remember being at the 2003 Belmont Stakes. Now, this is June. And being told by someone way high up in state government that Naira was about to be indicted on 4 felony counts, which turned out to be true. Now, if you're MGM, you cannot have a partner that's pleading guilty in federal court to 4 felony counts. You are licensed all over the world. You have to go through all these processes to have licenses all over the world. You cannot have that. And I remember being with a major gaming person in Albany in a lobbyist's office and telling this person, you will never, ever see MGM operate a VLT at Aqueduct. And he's looking at me like I'm crazy. And I could not have been more adamant. And then, you know, years later, he said, man, you were right. I said, well, think about it. You know, just listen to what I'm saying. I know what I'm saying is kind of way, way, way out there. But they're not. They're not going to enter a license agreement And so those issues also delayed the inevitable, and it cost a lot of money over a long period of time that the BLT should have been up and running way, way sooner.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, it should have been January 2004 when Saratoga Harness turned out to be the first one in New York State
right. To
go live. So that's today's little history lesson.
No, it was good.
There'll be a quiz tomorrow.
Well, no, it's always time well spent. In fact, Pat McKenna is going to be with us in the third hour, as it happens, and maybe different topics. But I did last night. I mentioned to him, I don't know if Naira probably is still absorbing, some of what was presented in this thing. So I'm not pressing him for any response. But I'm surprised there hasn't been more reaction to. To what was floated out there and what is in here. And it might just be that, there's a lot to, it's only been, 4 or 5 days. There's maybe a lot, but I don't know if a wide array of people have, even had a chance to look at the information. So, or even were aware of this report and, what its potential impact is. So I'm glad that, and you're invaluable for this, for this kind of reference. Let's talk a little HK. And it was watching with one eye yesterday, but back to Saturday.
Saturday was interesting because we had an odds on favorite win the first race. And then we had the favorite lose the next 9 races, which for Sha-10 tends to be the more formful of the two circuits, especially the two turf circuits. So times were a little bit off on Saturday. Joe won 3. Joe Marrero just seems to have a trouble every single race card, no matter how many races he runs. So he just keeps dominating. Very fast race in the Centenary Bosque Group 3 going 1,800 meters, 9 furlongs, 146.01 for the winner, Glorious Dragon. He looked very good, and he looks like he'll be very good in the upcoming Hong Kong Cup in 3 weeks at Sha-10 as they go a mile and a quarter. So he kind of threw down his challenge to kind of move up and take on the big boys. So then we come to yesterday. Yesterday, Happy Valley is kind of the chaos track. Well, yesterday, we had something I've never seen before. 4 straight winning favorites yesterday. It just never happens there. And we had the average price for the 9 winning favorites. The nine winning horses yesterday was $9.64. Now, the week before Sha-10, it was $20. So it was more than less than half of what we saw at Sha-10. Just kind of upside down. This is what usually happens at Sha-10 instead of happened at Happy Valley. So we had very formful races. Zach Purton got it going. Vincent Ho got it going, for the first race was Shining On. Then Zach had a nice winner when he just sent Classic Posh right to the lead. Gun dominated. A couple of good races. After that, then the favorites started coming in. Joe won on King Dragon for Man for Man. Came back and won 2 races back for John Size. Zach got a win in there. Matthew Kuhn got a nice win. And Matthew won that stakes race the week before on Glorious Dragon. So he's winning not just the long shot bombs, but the horses he really needs to get home. And these were good purse races. So then we get to the last race, and Marrero had won 3, Zach had won 2. The last race looked like Zach couldn't lose, and it was bet accordingly. He went off as the heavy odds-on favorite aboard Igniting. And he looked like also the clear speed of the race. Well, the gate opens, and from the 10 hole, Joe sends Capital Store, flying out of the gate. and just takes the lead and just took command. And Zach kind of peeked inside, peeked outside, never really made a commitment. He brought up after him quickly, kind of waited for the stretch, and by then it was too late. Joe won his fourth race of the day by a length and a quarter and a dominant performance. Hey, $13.90. Oh, this looked great. Zach finished in second. So the Jack standings, Joe 84, Zach 57.
Wow.
It's wider and wider.
Yeah, I mean, considering how, you know, through basically the first almost half of the meet, they were just basically sparring. It has been evident, you know, all through pretty much the second half of December and into January that that Marrero's just been, you know, almost back to the era, you know, before he went to Japan and had that aborted, disastrous, you know, Japan trial, when he was so dominant. It feels like this is the first time where he's had, you know, this kind of upper hand in several years.
Yes, absolutely. Just crushing it. And nothing wrong with Zach. Zach's riding well.
Yeah.
Just not getting the wins, and everyone else are, you know, kind of looking for crumbs off the table, because these two are just scooping up a lot of victories. Trainers, Casper Founds went into yesterday 0-27. He lost a couple races. Then he woke up with the winner in the last race, that race with the Capital Star that gun to the front. So Casta has 40. John Size has been red hot. He's up to 38. Frankie Law, 34. Tony Cruz, 33. Saturday is our 44th meet, so we are at the halfway point. We finish up the first half on Saturday. And like a couple of horses on Saturday. We got 7 turf races. 3-11. I'm saying Saturday. This is Friday night, Saturday morning, midnight, Saturday, 9 p.m. Friday, Pacific time. So we're running a day early. The rail is out at the C position, which means the 1,200 meter races will only have 12 starters. I'm going to go to race number 4. And I like number 3, Glen Ely Generals. Neil Callan is the rider. Form had been pretty good, and then last time out he got shuffled back to last. Actually passed 10 horses to get up for 4th. Didn't really threaten the winner. But today, with a better draw in that race under his belt, I think he can improve. And he is a son of Per and Kent, though. And I did an email blast for the Racing Form on him. Per Encanto had 2 winners again yesterday. He's the second leading sire behind Exceed and Excel, but he's just every day winner after winner. So maybe this will be his Saturday winner, number 3, Glen Ely Generals, number 3 in race number 4. That's going 1,200 meters. Race 8, I'm going to give you a favorite. And this one has been bet all 3 times. He has raced. This is number 7, Joyful Fortune. But if you can hook it up with something at a price, just Tony Cruz, Joe Marrero, they have 10 wins between them at the meet already so far. Weekend late, so was a barely beaten favorite. But the good thing was, doesn't pick up any weight, because when it finished towards the back of the pack, then he comes back at the same 122 pounds. So I think Joyful Fortune from post 9. Now, this is 1,000 meters. The outside post, the higher number posts are closer to the stands rail, where most of these straightaway races wind up being run. So that's a good post position for him. He gets a tongue tie for the first time. But I think Joe can use this one speed and make up for that last poor performance where he did burn quite a bit of money. So that's number 7, Joyful Fortune, and race 8. And then race 9, I'm going to go with number 7, let's do it. Now, this is considered a first-time starter. It does have some form in Australia where he ran pretty well. This four-year-old coming in, making his Hong Kong debut, doesn't have a lot of work to show for it. So we're going to have to trust David Hall and Blake Shen. David Hall, trivia question, was the first trainer of Mackay DeDever when she won three Melbourne Cups. David Hall was the trainer, yeah. And Blake Shen actually won the first Melbourne Cup that I ever get to see in person. It was Bart Cummings' 12th, and Blake was a 21-year-old kid and won that one named Viewed. So he has the mount on Let's Do It, has a couple of races in Australia where he ran well, showed good speed. Hopefully we can do that again going 1,200 meters. So number 7, Let's Do It, and race number 9. So that wraps up the look at this past week's Hong Kong racing and what we have to look forward to. We're back on the normal, you know, we're still on the normal schedule with Wednesdays at Happy Valley and weekends at Sha Tin, and then a couple of big races. Sumian is still suspended this week. He's supposed to be back next week, and then the question is, I don't know if he's applied for a license extension because his license was good until February 14th. So not sure how that's going to work out, whether he's going to be able to extend the license a little bit, because this trip to Hong Kong, unfortunately, with the COVID and the racing suspension, just hasn't had him on the track as much as we would have liked.
Excellent. Dick, before I go, too, I had seen that. I don't know if you saw the little thing about Christophe Lemaire. When you mentioned Sumian, you made me think of, did you see Lemaire wants to figure out a way to come ride in the States and get a chance in the Derby?
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah, I don't know where I saw it, if a Racing Post or somewhere. I've got a lot of international news feeds as part of the Twitter timeline, and it just sort of registered in the back of my mind. He said, you know, I've participated and won, you know, international, you know, standards. And he said it's something he'd really like to do. He thought it would, you know, really enhance, you know, his career. It's just interesting that, you know, the international set, you know, it kind of shows that they're conscious of you know the level, the importance of things like Derby and Triple Crown and you know our biggest events.
Yeah, that's great to hear. He certainly has the worldwide experience, and Japan has dirt racing, so he does get to ride on dirt tracks. Not every race, but you know they do have that experience over there as well. So, yeah, that's very interesting. What would be real interesting is if the Japanese had a horse, which always helps. And another quick thing, Steve, I noticed that Hong Kong has now approved more international simulcasting, and it's gonna happen during the summer months when live racing shuts down. So, can we say Saratoga?
We've talked about that before.
King George and stuff like that. But I mean, that would be fascinating for our big Saturdays.
Absolutely.
See if that works out time wise and everything. But they upped it a decent amount. So not just a couple, but I think 10 or 15 extra race days coming in during the summertime break from live racing. So as far as Saratoga goes, timing looks perfect.
How about that? And you know the revenue. You know, we've been talking about this for years. How international the game has become, and Japan, that opening that door is great. Because how many races did it used to be that they would take outside? was like single digits, right? It was like six or something. It was some crazy number.
I'm sorry, Hong Kong?
No,
Hong Kong,
Japan.
Yeah, well, Japan kind of expanded it if they have a horse racing.
Right.
So if there's a horse in the Ark, there's a horse in the Breeders' Cup, whatever, then it's a lot easier for them to do. But they have this phenomenal business model. It does more betting than anyone in the world. There's no one even close. But it's very closed and restricted. So they're not
right.
Letting their people bet all these races from around the world and stuff like that. But in that closed market, it works extremely well. So, yeah, they've loosened it up some. And part of that, like Hong Kong said, it's to combat the illegal market stuff. They're going to be taking bets on these races anyway and stuff like that. But, yeah, Japan's gotten a little more open. I understand why they do it. And I think it's smart business on their part not to have full-blown open unlimited simulcast and stuff like that. That would be eventually their demise. But, yeah, for the big races and stuff like that, yeah, and when they have a horse, I mean, the interest in their horse, and if they have a horse in anything, the amount of Japanese media that comes over and covers it is amazing.
Well, and so, Darren has talked about that when Darren Rogers, when there's a potential for a Japanese horse to make the Derby, like Lanny, he gets overwhelmed with media interest and media requests.
Yeah.
In fact, Dick, I just found that it was at Thoroughbred Racing that I saw it, at thoroughbredracing.com, because I had gone back to Charlie's piece, and that's where I saw it. So I just retweeted it, but that's where Lemaire talks about the five or six races internationally that just sort of overshadow everything else, and he'd like a Derby mount is his request. So take a look at that. Dick, I appreciate it. This was beyond the HK conversation. Very valuable. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Talk to you next week.
You got it. Dick Powell, everybody. Let's take a break. Top of the hour just passed. And we'll get Tony Black. We'll get Tony Black in here, and then Haskin. We've got Chris Griffin, Sam Houston, and we'll recap a little bit. I've got the pick six here. I did not handicap it as I have the last 3 weeks. I may just be satisfied with hitting that pick six on Sunday and just say, okay, I'm ahead for the meet. No, we'll get Chris's opinion, and I can probably add a thought or two, but I've got the PPs. And as I mentioned, Pat McKenna as well. And I think we've got a little bit of a news kind of a breaking thing with Pat in hour three that I think will be very well received based on what I just read. So excited to get Pat in with that news. Haskin with a lot of three-year-old. And Tony for a couple of minutes here. Let's get Tony in. I've got, I had something sitting on my notepad since last week about, they came up with Rich Migliori. And I'm going to let Tony riff on it too. Back after this, hour two at the Races Series XM.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports, Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, 10 minutes in, hour two, and a quick rundown of what's going on today, since I've got the page in front of me. And as I mentioned, Aqueduct returns today, and Fairgrounds, Gulfstream, Oaklawn, Sam Houston, as mentioned, Turfway tonight gets back, and going to actually talk to Ed tomorrow. I had noticed, in fact, I mean, these nightly cards at Turfway are just amazing. And, you know, Saturday they only got four races in. So things got delayed, or scuttled. But, on Friday night, I happened to have noticed the pick five again, $6,647. And that was with two favorites. Two favorites in the first leg, $7 winner, and in the fourth leg, $580, and a second choice in the anchor leg paid $8. The two tough horses. There was a longest shot on the board, granted. In the second leg, you had the horse that was a 30-to-1 shot and went off at 32-to-1 essentially, paid $65.80. Jay Holden, with a homebred, a Colonial Colony, an Indiana bred, and a 7-year-old, Stewards Rules. And basically, literally passed them all. was at the start was dead last, and didn't come from 8 miles back, but got up under Sammy Bermudez and pays $65.80. And then there was also a sixth choice that won the third leg. So there were, no doubt, there were two tough horses to come up with, an $18 winner and a $65 winner, but $6,600. And this has just been, it's been from the start of the meet, at every single night at Turfway. They did have one of those classic with the snow and the, you get. You know, two, three of those a winter at Turfway. When you just feel sorry for everybody that the wind is howling and the snow's going sideways. Yeah, that's what they were facing on Saturday night. Ed's got his Friday night thing that he does too. We've talked about, so I'm sure he'll have one tomorrow. So we'll talk to Ed. In fact, we'll talk to Ed and to James. We'll get. I saw James put out his Super Bowl analysis. So we'll get some of that. I seemed to me yesterday. Yesterday was Wednesday, right? That there was just very little. There's very little buzz. I think this game certainly is going to be entertaining, right? The Chiefs and Bucks, but I don't sense there's much of a excitement about it. I don't. I just weird. Now I have not been I really don't want. I don't watch like ESPN the way you know I used to at years ago. You know, in the background, in mornings and whatnot, or even if really in the afternoon. But you know, I've been watching racing, but I just don't. Am I right, or it seemed like there was more excitement about the championship games than Sunday? I don't know. I will do this. I will, because I made queso last night for Tina. Tina wanted queso for dinner. and I had made a beef stew. She said, save that for tomorrow. I want queso. So I made queso. I'm going to put out two Super Bowl Sunday recipes. The queso, which I don't think I've ever publicized, but the you're going to be thrilled. Trust me. For those of you that like restaurant queso, you're going to be tickled. Believe me. Tina, when I started, you know, she started coming to Louisville, and I started taking her to Caporal, El Caporal, and which is one of my favorites, when in the Ville. And their queso is terrific. And Tina, at some point, after a couple of trips to, you know, to Kentucky, said, can you make that queso? So I started experiment. I looked online. I tried to find recipes. I took different shots at it. And I finally found something. I don't even remember where it was that I copied. And it's perfect. And the key's the cheese, and not Velveeta and you know, nothing like that, or you know, those kinds that I suppose lend themselves to somewhat. This relies shockingly on Land of Lakes American. Land of Lakes American as the base, and combined with cream or half and half, or milk, I suppose. I haven't done it with, you know, regular milk, but I use pretty much half and half is what I use. It's a cup of half and half and a cup of, or a pound, I should say, of Land O'Lakes American. And you do it in a double boiler. If you don't have a double boiler, you can just take a you know, good sized stock pot and then a saucepan, and you put the saucepan in the water in the stock pot, and do it that way. And you melt the cheese with the cream, with the half and half, and then add a handful of spices and a can, 4 ounce can of diced jalapeno. And it is, I'm telling you, as good as any restaurant. Tina now says better than even than El Caporal, which is very kind of her. But, and I've done some other fun things. I've used that actually as a base for a Mexican mac and cheese. Hey now, your eyes just lit up. I can tell. Yeah, that's an option. The spices. Casey's just letting me know. Tony can't. Tony's with Maddie at the doctor, so no Tony today. So here's what I'll do. I'm gonna continue to flesh this out and give you, since you're writing stuff down. It's a cup of half and half, a pound, and it's got to be Land O'Lakes. Do not screw around with this. Don't think that any run-of-the-mill American, for whatever reason, it must be the, you know, the makeup of the Land O'Lakes. It just, it melts smoothly, and it doesn't, it's not oily, it doesn't separate, it doesn't glop. I'm telling you, Land O'Lakes, white American, 1 pound. And you can get it sliced as much as, you know, as thick as you want, because you're going to dice it to help it melt in the boiler, or the saucepan. Here's the spices. It's a half teaspoon of cumin. Okay. Half teaspoon. This is easy. You can probably remember this. Half a teaspoon of cumin, a quarter teaspoon of salt, a quarter teaspoon of pepper, and a quarter teaspoon of cayenne, of red pepper. And then a dash or two of chili powder. That's it. That's the whole spice mix up. Once the cheese melts, you're going to add the 4 ounces of diced jalapeno. And you can put the whole can in. There's a little bit of liquid. Don't drain it. The liquid contributes. So the jalapeno goes in, stir that in to the cheese, and then add the dry spices. Half a teaspoon of cumin, quarter a teaspoon of salt, quarter a teaspoon of pepper, quarter a teaspoon of red pepper, cayenne, and dash or two of chili powder. There you go. And you've got a queso for Sunday that is going to, people are going to go nuts. Trust me. So thank me later. That's the, or you can thank me now. and if you want to come up with a name for it, it's a knockoff of El Caporal in Louisville. Their queso. Famously had, I'm vamping here until Casey's going to reach out. We might as well get Haskin in a couple minutes early. Chuck, I think it was Chuck that Simon first brought me to El Caporal, and the one off of Bardstown Road, which is now across from the Costco. And there's three, at least three El Caporals, but Bardstown is the best, my favorite anyway. Had a dinner in there. I don't know if we arranged it. It sort of came together. Case, we got a quick change. Now John Secura can take us now. He got stuck in a meeting. So I had thought that John was going to join us after Dick, and so we'll get John in here now. I think one night I went after, I don't know if it was, I think it was Derby week, and there might have been Breeders' Cup, but it's when Michelle Yu was working at Churchill. Michelle, Jim Mulvihill, and Lucas Marquardt. It was like, right? Is that, was it Lucas? Was Greg Hall? But Greg Hall at that, it was kind of funny. It was kind of ran into, it ended up, I remember having a really fun night. I may have to check. Jimbo probably's got a better memory for this kind of thing than me. There's your El Caporal queso, and I'll put it on Twitter and Facebook, because I don't think I've ever put that out publicly. But if you like queso, you're in business, believe me. And the other thing, of course, I'll do is the sweet and sour meatballs, the can't lose, which everybody loves. All right, so. And as for Super Bowl, I don't know. I guess I'll root again for Captain Andy, for Andy Reid. It's, you know, and I lived in Kansas City. I spent a really nice year plus. Have I ever told that Kansas City story while we wait for John? This is like a fireside chat. I worked in Kansas City for Procter & Gamble, for the food service division. And one of these hotels and restaurants. And one of the hotels that I called on in Olathe, Stu Stram, Hank Stram's son, Stuart, was the general manager. And we became friendly. And you know, for me, having grown up, you know, first as a fan and you know, just watching Hank Stram's Chief teams, and then listening to Stram on the broadcast, and he's so good. To get friendly with his son was really cool. And I, after the Royals had won that World Series in 85, I got Chief tickets too, and I asked him to come. You know, to, we went to see a Raider game. I said, "Do you want to go see the Raiders on?" I'm sure you get great seats still. And so he came with me. I got to take Stu Stram to a Chiefs game, and you know, the seats were up in the second deck there, and toward the end zone. And I sort of apologized. I said, "I'm sure you could sit in better places." He says, "You know, I haven't been back here since my father was fired," and it, at that point, it had been a number of years. So anyway, so I've got a little affinity for the Chiefs if I've never mentioned that before. Certainly have an affinity.